Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Got a few things on tap tonight. We'll be talking with the champ, Mr. Layman Brewster, and chilling with the champ. But right now, going to be chilling a little bit with my co-host for the next 15 minutes, Mr. Jabron Quillen. Jabron, how are we doing tonight, my man?
Doing great, JK. Doing great. It's been a great week.
Hey. I hear that. By the way, just in case you didn't know, we are going to be joined by a gentleman from the famous Gleason Gym tonight, Tuesday night, trainer, Mr. Buddy McGirt. He's going to headline the show. So, I don't know whether you ran into him at the gym or not, or perhaps something in production, but just a little heads up.
Oh, okay. Sounds great. I haven't had the chance to run into him. I get in there real early in the morning a lot of times. So a lot of times those guys be in there in the afternoon.
Yeah, I would assume it's something like wild card. Considering the trainers and the different MMA fighters, I would assume that there's usually they come in after the public or away from public eyes. But we did hear about a couple things that I thought was very interesting. Know that the Thurman Porter fight is going to be back on in June right now. And also, we also know that even though Gary Russell didn't make the 30-day wait, the fight is still on. But what do you think? What were your thoughts on some of those on some of the upcoming fights before we get the champion?
I'm very pleased to hear that the Thurman fight is back on, and I'm hearing that it's most likely going to be in my backyard over here at the Barclays. So that is definitely going to be a great thing if they can get that signed and sealed for the venue.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the things that's kind of in question is where it's going to be at. I'm sure that's just a minor thing. The most important thing is that the fight is back on, and that it's a fight that I think the public wants to see, and it's also a fight that I think could not only I think it would be a much more meaningful fight for Sean than for Keith. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. You can say that. It'll be more defining for Sean than Thurman. I feel like Thurman, even without the fight, would still be marketing him more than Sean Porter. I mean, that's not because I don't think that Sean Porter is a good fighter, but it's just history. You got these classy guys that just go in and do their job and get out of there, and it's like, you know, nobody really want to see that. But when you got somebody who's always got some antics going on or drama, it's like, you know, America loves drama, so...
Speaking of drama, and a gentleman that has a lot to lose, you know, I know, you know, a lot of people are enthralled with Mr. Adrian Broner, and they, you know, according to his talents and according to, you know, past reputation and you know, buffoonery or whatever you want to call it, you know, I mean, he's supposed to be the next Floyd Mayweather. Now, you know, we talk about somebody that has a lot to lose, and we've seen Broner come in, you know, and lose against some opponents that he shouldn't. Now, I'm not saying Marcus Madonna is not, you know, in that category, but do you think that Adrian Broner, you know, I mean, if he makes a bad showing, regardless of whether or not he wins, if he makes a bad showing and Ashley Tailplane is able to take him the distance, how much do you think that would affect Adrian Broner's career going forward?
It would affect it, but I think with his character, he will still be able to find some fights out there. Not saying that's a good thing, but I just believe people love drama and they will pay for drama. So when they will pay to see him lose, basically, you know.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, it's at this point in his career, I think that's kind of the case. But if he wants to be a champion, or, you know, as he called it, the people's champ, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, that he hasn't cut down on some of his antics. I mean, we don't see him making it rain in the strip club. You know, he still has a few things that comes out of his mouth. I mean, you know, there's you know, the so-called now controversy with Floyd and whatnot. But, you know, it's... I don't know, for somebody that claims to be the next Floyd Mayweather, you know, if he loses this fight, I don't know, you know, if he would be marketable. I mean, you know, especially at the price. Now, I'm not saying that he couldn't get fights, but it certainly wouldn't be where I think he would be the main event and commanding six figures as he does now.
Oh, no, no. He'll definitely step back. But I'll just think he wouldn't have any leverage far as negotiating and different things far as the numbers-wise, but I feel he still would be on fight cards. They still would put him on cards just because his personality and his name and stuff like that, you know. Because if he doesn't be impressive in his fights, he always comes to fight. Like, you're just not gonna go in there and just walk over Broner and it's gonna just be a walk in the park. Never that, you know. So he's always a live body. So that's why I say he will still get fights.
Well, you know, on the other side, you know, if he has managed to manage his money well, he wouldn't really need another few more fights. I mean, you know, living in Cincinnati, you know, he's made enough to be comfortable. You know, I mean, he's not gonna live like Floyd with private jets and whatnot, but you know. He can look very comfortable, but
when you got, you know, 4, 5, 6 kids out there and different baby mamas, that's a total different story.
Well, it worked out. I mean, you know, the thing about it, you know, I definitely understand where you're coming from, and the state of Ohio does not play. They will put your behind in jail for child support.
Exactly.
there's no free rides in Ohio. I don't care, you know. Trump can say what he wants to about Kasich, but, you know, even before Kasich got there, there were no free rides in Ohio. You get behind a child support, somebody be knocking at your door, and they'll be talking about changing your attire.
But, exactly.
But now, there's some other rumors that I'd like to address, because I really don't want to see this happen. Now, it might happen, you know, and I'm sure there would be a lot of money involved, but I don't see where Triple G could possibly put enough butts in seats to make this possible. But there are rumors, or, you know, that Floyd is saying that he might come out of retirement to fight Triple G. Now, to those that wanted to see Floyd take a good butt whooping, to me, I think this would be the fight to buy. Because as much as I trust Floyd, and as much as I believe, you know, in his defensive abilities, I have to think that the Triple G might be able to bully Floyd. And the reason why I say this is because I don't ever remember a time in Floyd's life where he weighed more than 150 pounds. Your thoughts on a possible matchup with Triple G and Floyd?
Well, I have to differ with you on that, JK, because Triple G is the middleweight champion. He's fighting at the 160-pound limit, but he comes in, he walks into the ring between 168 and 172. No more than 172, he walks in the ring. When Floyd fought Canelo came in the ring at 172. Okay.
If we're talking size and stature.
Now, I understand Triple G might punch a little harder than Canelo, but at the same time, I see that Triple G is vulnerable. I've watched a lot of footage on him as of late, and he's vulnerable because he's not been in there with guys who's elusive and who has great footwork. He's been in there with guys who's flat-footed. And the one person who did have good footwork, he didn't have power to keep Triple G off of him in the sense of he didn't have the experience to know how to, like, tie Triple G up and get him at angles and spin him around. Was it Willie Monroe a couple of fights ago? And he had a lot of success when he fought on the inside with Triple G, because with Triple G, he don't like to waste shots. So he don't take a lot of chances on the inside. If you notice, he fights from a distance. He's very calculated with his shots. He don't waste punches. So when you get him on the inside, he don't let a lot of punches go, because he has to get range where he can get that leverage as far as power off on his punches, because up close he don't have a lot of power on his punches. He's not immune to throwing any type of combinations on the inside, which Floyd does. Floyd is a great boxer when it comes to in the clinches, like where you clinch and you got one hand free, different things like that. Things of that sort will frustrate Triple G, because he's never been in that situation. He's never been clinched a whole bunch or tied up or spun around, just a bunch of different antics. So mentally, he's never been in those type of waters, and I think that Floyd would really frustrate him. I'm not saying it would be an easy fight for Floyd Mayweather, but I think Floyd would be able to expose Triple G because William Monroe, I gave him, he did a great job in rounds three and four during that fight when he noticed, like, look, I can't keep this guy off me. I can't just jab and run. So I'm going to just go out on my shield and fight this guy on the inside. And when he did, he noticed, wow, I'm having great success.
Well,
until
yeah,
he got winded.
Well, once again, see, I got the, you referred to it, power. See, you know, William Monroe, he showed, you know, he could how to work Triple G, and we know that Floyd could work in the same way, but once again, Floyd hasn't had a knockout in almost a decade, and I don't know if Floyd could bring the power up from, you know, I mean, Floyd weighs, I think, what, 147, maybe 150 at the most, and you got a Triple G walking in at almost 170. I just don't know if Floyd has the power. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have the proper defense, but I think, you know, and you also got to put, you know, a very seasoned trainer like Abel Sanchez in the equation. So I'm not really sure, you know, what we see, but I think it would be an interesting fight. For my part, I would much rather see Floyd stay retired, and, you know, he's made enough money in the game. Don't let himself get baited into something that he doesn't really need. And, you know, I mean, hey, it sounds good, but Floyd, stay doing what you're doing.
So what would be your feeling? How would you feel if they did fight and Floyd dominated Triple G like he did Canelo?
Well, hey, I mean, like I said, I still haven't put Floyd in my greatest of all time. You know, I still put, you know, I still got, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson and you know, some of the old guys. I mean, I still kind of rank Marvin Hagler ahead of him, but, you know, hey, I'm old school, so, you know, like I said, I'm not discrediting Floyd's abilities, but I think this would be this would be high risk,
low reward
for Floyd. Now, you know, now from Triple G, it would be a whole different thing. I mean, you know, that would get him on the map. I mean, you know, from now on, he would be the guy that beats, you know, I mean, you know, for Triple G, it would open up a whole avenue of opportunity. But for Floyd, I don't see where he has anything to gain from it.
Well,
I mean, you know
what? Devil advocate, I think if Triple G fought him and lost, I think that will actually bring more people to the table for him. People would then want to fight him. They'll be like, you know what? Floyd beat him. I can beat him, you know? So that would actually make him a little more marketable if you want to flip it on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for Triple G, it could go either way. For Floyd, you know, I mean, you know, if he beats him, you know, well, you know, once again, he's the greatest of all time. But if he loses, you know, well, yeah, I know he wasn't all that to begin with. You know what I'm saying? You know, like I mean, for Floyd,
yeah.
You know, for Floyd, it, you know, it's too much risk. You know, and like I said, you know, once again, you know, for the amount of money that Floyd would want, I don't know if Triple G could put that many butts in seats.
Yeah. That's a good point right there, is the butts in the seats.
I mean, you know, if he wanted that much money to fight Pacquiao, how much money would Floyd to not only, you know, to come out of retirement, you know, but, you know, would it only be a one contract fight or what? I mean, you know. So it's I just don't see where Floyd really has anything to gain from it, other than, you know, it being a matter of pride. And I can understand that, but I just don't see where it's not something that he really needs to do. But let's see. I think we're joined by the champ now. Champ, are you there?
Hey, man, what's going on?
Oh, well, hey, Proper Introductions. This is our brand new episode every Sunday. We will be chilling with the champ, meaning Mr. Former Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Layman Brewster. So, all of that out of the way, my man, how's everything going tonight?
Everything's wonderful, man. Thanks for asking. I'm waiting to hear from you.
Well, we got caught up in a little discussion, and hey, who better to let in on the discussion than somebody that's been there? We were talking about the possibility of the Floyd Triple G matchup. You know, it's kind of been on everyone's lips. Floyd mentioned it, so you know that once Floyd mentions it, it's out there. Your thoughts on a possible Floyd Triple G matchup, knowing that Floyd has never been a true middleweight?
Right. You know something? I mean, it's just my own personal opinion. I don't like it, and the reason why I don't like it is because he's fighting a very dangerous guy who's a very big puncher, and I think that it could hurt him to fight him at a catch weight, because he would be putting on weight, whereas Triple G would actually be losing weight, which would actually make him a little bit faster, but yet still maintain that type of power. And you know, Floyd's career, man, he is flawless, and it's like, why take a risk on becoming 50-0, fighting a guy that's so dangerous that would be considered one of the hardest opponents that you've ever faced in your career. So my thing is, I'm not to say don't fight a bum, but I'm saying go ahead and stay within the realm of the weight of fighters that you're fighting, whoever would be, you know, maybe in the top 10 in his weight division. And that's where I think he should just stay there, man. I don't think he should do it, because I think it's too much of a risk. There's going to be a lot of politics against him. There's going to be a lot of pressure. And you got a very dangerous fighter in Golovkin. I don't like it personally.
And not only that, Layman, but, you know, I also think that the X factor, you know, in something like that could be Abel Sanchez, Triple G's trainer.
Also, I mean, when you say that, the X factor, you mean in terms of his ability to train?
I'm talking his ability, is not only his ability to train, but, I mean, you know, Abel is a veteran. He's been watching Floyd for, you know, I mean, all the way through his career. Not to say that other trainers couldn't notice the same thing, but I'm sure if you got, if you got an experienced trainer in there, you know, that also makes a difference.
Right. No, you're absolutely right about that, man. And you know, with the type of power that a guy like Gennady Golovkin brings into the fight, you know, a guy like Floyd, who, you know, we understand is not the Floyd that he first started, most definitely, and he's not the prime Floyd. His ego may still be the prime, but my thing is, man, you could come back and you could be 50-0, but you don't have to fight the absolute toughest fighter out there. You fought all the tough fighters throughout your career. You have nothing else to prove. I say put it on cruise control, because the people are going to come back to see you fight whether you got a title or not, because you have done something that many fighters have never done, which is transcend having a title and still having such a big following. And I just personally, as his friend and, you know, former stablemate as an amateur, we came up together as young professionals under Bob Arum, and we're still friends. I personally would like to see him, and what I would consider playing this safe would be just to fight somebody that's already within the realm of his weight division and not to go and fight, you know, what people say is the most dangerous fighter out there pound for pound, which would be a Gennady Golovkin. And I just don't want to see it win, lose, or draw because of the damage that it could do to Floyd, even if he wins the fight, from getting hit by a guy that punches so hard. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from. Layman, you know, now, I know you keep up with politics, and we're not going to really get into politics on the show, you know, but I just think it's, you know, we just need to acknowledge, you know, our president is going to Cuba for the first time. The doors are opening. And one of the things that, you know, this trip does now, it means now that Cuban baseball players can now play in the United States without having to defect. Now, Layman, do you think that we're going to see a rule somewhat like this may be implemented in boxing? And if we do, what do you think the effect is going to be on the American boxing scene?
Well, that's a very good question that you asked, man. I truly believe that it's a blessing to have a person like Obama that would finally transcend, go further than what, you know, good old America has always done in the past, which is to alienate Cuba for whatever real political reasons that they don't talk about. But again, we won't get into that. But I will say this much. I think that if Cuba was to start allowing fighters from Cuba to turn professional and still be able to fight against American fighters and travel the world abroad without defecting, I think it's going to bring greater revenue to their country. I think you're going to see boxing reemerge as one of the top sports in the world. And it is still one of the top sports in the world, but just to have a country like Cuba with all those great athletes that are no longer under the communism where it's like, oh, you can only fight as an amateur, but you can't turn pro. I think you're going to see some of the best fighters come out of there because they got great training, they got great medical facilities. They got a lot of great things there in Cuba, and I think that will open up to the world. And I wouldn't be surprised if some fighters didn't go over there to even train just because of their technique. So I think it's going to do the sport of boxing wonderful. I mean, great. That's what I believe.
Yeah, it would, you know, it's to me that as soon as I heard about you know, the baseball amendment, I'm thinking, you know, well, you know, second to baseball in Cuba is boxing. So, you know, if the baseball, if they made you know, the amendment for baseball, I'm thinking that we also might see it for boxing. Now, Layman, you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to say something that's probably premature, but something that I'm excited about is I may be getting a chance to go to Cuba, and I may be able, I may be not just going by myself. I may be going over there with three other world heavyweight champions, Lights Out James Toney, Chris Bird, and Ray Mercer. We may be going over there to spend time with the Cubans over there, and going to see the boxing gyms and just, you know, getting to speak to the people and them getting to see for the first time ever in the history of Cuba, four world heavyweight champions at one time. So we're working on that. And at the same time, there is a rumor, and it's just just a rumor, and it's just what I heard, that they're trying to organize a fight between Lysel James Toney versus Shannon the Cannon Briggs in Cuba. And it'll be the first pay-per-view fight ever in the history of Cuba.
Now, you know, see, we also heard Tuesday, I had Mr. Bill Kaplan on the show, and I'm sure you're familiar with Bill, you know, publicist and also advisor for Golden Boy. And he also broke the news that Golden Boy has a contingency that's going over to Cuba and exploring a certain, you know, the possibility of certain fighters and whatnot. So it seems like, you know, not only are the heavyweight champs, you know, open to going to Cuba and establishing relationships, we also have, you know, these other organizations now. If you're talking about it, Golden Boy is talking about it, you know, then I'm quite sure we have Top Rank, Al Haymon, and a whole lot of other people talking about it too. So this could be the boom that boxing has been waiting for in as far as, you know, if you want to say putting it back on the map.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think that the whole world is waiting for this opportunity to get in there to be able to bring about business and import and export. You know, I think that there's a lot that Cuba has to offer to the rest of the world. I mean, at least the embargo countries, so to speak. So that would definitely be the Americas.
You know, I'm not one to, you know, point fingers, but Layman, it sounds, you know, kind of funny here. Now, you know, you guys just opened up this brand new cigar line, and now you're going to Cuba. Hey man, are you trying to like trounce the competition here? What's going on?
Oh, most definitely, man. I mean, you know, our cigars are heavy. They're called heavyweight chip cigars. And we would most definitely like to get into Cuba and do some type of deal with them where Cuba would be supplying cigars directly to world heavyweight champions for the consumers out there to smoke cigars. Because the thing that I noticed, because I work for Al Haymon, is that every time I go to a fight, after the fight, all the winners, they smoke. They walk around with their crew, and all their crews just smoke cigars. So I'm saying to these guys, like, listen, man, support boxing, because this money that we get, we're putting it back into the amateur programs and things like that. You know, so, you know, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to working with Cuba, because Cuba's been known to have the best soil, which grows the best tobacco plants.
Not to speak about what the Cuban rolling technique is one of the best in the world, but hey,
yes.
Let's, you know, hey, we can talk cigars and politics, but this is not the show. But I promise
right,
we are going
right.
to do that. But you know, now keeping kind of, you know, with some of the things that have been talked about, you know. You also talked about Mr. Al Haymon. Now, Layman, I know, you know, you've almost been assaulted this week, you know, in the video about Mr. Al Haymon's influence on boxing. So, you know, I'm going to take the soft approach. And, you know, can you just kind of, you know, give us an overview of how much you think Al Haymon has done for the sport of boxing? And how it is quite easy for you to stick, you know, to stand up to all the naysayers, you know, that says that the PBS and PBC series has detracted from boxing. Can you want to elaborate on some of the statements and you know, some of the naysayers that you've had to put up with this week?
Well, when it comes to the naysayers, you know, I just say that, you know, for you to say anything negative about R. Heyman is only because you don't know him or because you are aligned with some type of promoter that is angry that Al's doing what he's doing and he's successful with it. See, people always like to hate someone else when they're successful and they're not, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong. These other guys are successful in their own right, but the way Al Heyman is going about doing it is just killing the competition. So, you know, we got a word for people like that in the hood. We call them haters, haterade, you know, and they drinking a lot of it. But the thing that I want to say about Al, the thing that makes him different, just one of the things that make him different is that these guys, you take a Oscar De La Hoya, you take a Bob Arum. These guys get the cream of the crop. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you got your amateur national winner. You got your gold medalist. But Al Heyman's not so much concerned with all that. Don't get me wrong. That matters. But if you look at the people he got fighting on his cards, these guys ain't all national golden gloves or USA boxing champions. Man, these guys are just guys that can actually fight that was found in the gym. He finds a diamond in the rough. And you can't be mad at him for paying these guys what they deserve. So that's what a lot of these guys are mad about, is because I was actually paying these diamonds in the rough the type of money that a guy who won the nationals is supposed to make, you know. But I was giving everybody an opportunity. He's saying, I don't care where you're from. I don't care what your color is. If you can fight, you can fight. And if you can fight, this is what you deserve to be paid. Because he knows if he paid these guys what they deserve, they're going to go out there, they're going to put on a great fight, and then they're going to speak well about him. So, you know, when I hear people saying negative things about Al, I just scratch my head because I'm like, how could you hate a man that has not taken advantage of anybody, that has not made somebody stay in a contract that they didn't want to be in, that has not made a promise and didn't keep it? I've never done any of this. And it really, like, I can't wait to, like, run into somebody that got something negative to say, man. Well, no, I take that back. I hope I don't run into somebody that got something negative to say, because it's like, I'm the type of person, like, prove all things, you know. Don't just talk about because your homeboy said this or you heard that. No, show me where Al has done something wrong to you or to somebody that you know, because you can't. You cannot. I mean, I've known Al for a while now, and I can honestly say this man is the type of man he would take a loss before he'll let somebody else take a loss. He has a very big heart. And when you get people like that, it makes you want to protect them, just like I feel like I want to protect Al, because he didn't have to get in this sport. This man had millions upon millions before he got into boxing. He didn't need boxing. He wanted to help the sport. So it just, why would you try to go against this man who's not done anything to anybody? And I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me what he's done wrong. I talk to people through Facebook or through just any conversation, and it's like they can never say what he's done wrong, but they can always point the finger at him. You know, it doesn't make sense. It's kind of like Obama, I guess, but that's just what it is, just ignorance.
Well, like I said, the only thing I hold against Al Heyman is the fact that he's from Cleveland and off from Youngstown. So that's just a rivalry thing. It has nothing to do with what he has to do with boxing. But I cannot say, you know, how you can criticize a man for, number one, overpaying his fighters, and number two, taking care of his fighters. I mean, you know, and like you say, he's willing to take a loss, you know, out of his pocket in order to pay his fighters. I don't think we've seen that in too many. And Al is not even a promoter. He's a manager.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
He's a manager.
Which puts him in a whole different category, where usually managers, I mean, you know, we don't see too many managers, you know, that don't like you said, you know, this is something that he didn't have to do because, you know, I mean, you know, I know Al didn't make his money in boxing. Al made his money in entertainment. But, you know, now I also want to go back to a conversation that we had with Bill. And we were talking about the amateurs. And, Layman, I know you have, you know, you have a vested interest in the amateurs. But I was asking Bill why Golden Boy was signing so many of these young guys that you know, with only 5 and 6 fights. And the reason he gave me was because of the inconsistency of the amateur program. Well, he even had a little worse conditions than what I'm describing. But the inconsistency of the amateur program made it necessary for them to go and get these younger fighters and cultivate them rather than go back to the amateurs and depend on finding the next Golden Glove or Olympic camp that they could nurture. Layman, your thoughts on that? Is this the direction that boxing is taking? We're getting away from nurturing our amateur program and putting more time and effort into these guys, into the young pros? And is that the right direction for boxing, in your opinion?
Well, right now, I think it's the right direction, and I'm going to tell you why. Because they say that the blind cannot lead the blind, and a lot of these trainers, see, they didn't sit up under the Eddie Futches and, you know, the Emmanuel Stewarts. They didn't take to heart what Angelo Dundee and Georgie Bentons and Bill Slaytons was trying to pass on to them. They got a glimpse of what the finished product looked like and what it produced, and what it produced was money. So they learned just enough to understand how to make money or how these guys can make money. They didn't all grasp and understand the true, I guess I'm going to call it, science of what boxing is, the art and science, the love of it. And so, therefore, you have these trainers out here trying to bring up an amateur based on what they think they need to do versus what they really need to do, and they are producing crappy fighters. They really, really are. I mean, I go to these gyms, just like I was in the gym the other day. I don't know if I was telling you last week, but, man, there was a guy, he was trying to teach a guy how to be a world champion in one day. He had him hitting the heavy bag, and in between resting and getting water and collecting your mind, he had to doing push-ups and then hitting the bag again and then doing push-ups. And I'm sitting there looking, and I'm looking around, and everybody in the gym, like, so ain't nobody going to say nothing? And then the guy saw everybody looking at him, and he thought it was his time to shine, so he made a big fiesta about, oh, This why we can't be checked, because you can't even do who can do push-ups after hitting the bag and do push-ups again and hit the bag? Like, man, it's people like you that I just wish, like, I could make you disappear forever in the sport, because it's people like you that hurt the sport. I've seen so many trainers want to have people look at them like they're the greatest trainers of all time, so when the fighter is warming up to go out into the ring, they back there making all this noise, hitting the pads, making the fighter hit the pads as hard as they can and yelling and this and that, talking loud so that they can get attention, don't realize they're wearing the fighter out. He goes out in the fight and get knocked out because he's tired from trying to entertain the people to please your ego before the bout even started. So I like the fact that you have guys 5 and 6 pro fights, the ones that made it through that amateur, because you got so many rules as an amateur that it really hurts you as being a pro. I mean, there are so many things wrong with the amateur program that I am actually glad that they had enough sense to say, let me find a guy that's already starting out on his way and let me help groom him, versus saying, oh, well, we're going to keep an eye on this amateur, and as soon as he come out, then we're going to get with him, because he may have so many bad habits, because there's so many things you cannot do in the amateurs that it actually ruins you as a pro. That's why great amateurs don't necessarily make the best pros.
Well, now I want to play the devil's advocate here, because, you know, now we have guys like you. We have guys like Jake Smith. We have guys like Coach Russell, Gary Russell Sr., Mike Stafford, Barry Hunter. You know, all of you guys are involved in our amateur program. Now, you know, are you guys becoming dinosaurs along with the program? You know, have we made you, you know, well, you know, you already started, so you might as well finish. Go ahead.
Well, I had a guy that I ain't even gonna say his name, but the guy told some fighters, oh, Layman's old school. His training is old school. Like, huh? What do you mean old school? How could I be? How on earth could you even fix your lips to even think for 1 second that I'm old school? Like, can you explain to me what old school is? Like, first of all, who have you trained? What have you done? What have you accomplished? How many amateur titles have you ever won? How many people have you ever knocked out or even beat? How many world titles do you have? So for you to even speak, fix your lips to say that I'm old school, I'm scratching my head like, wow, times really, really have changed, because I thought that the older the wine, the greater the value. You know what I mean? It's like, what I'm trying to say is I have learned boxing from starting out as a little skinny kid, learning how to box, until my shoulders got wider. Then I had to learn to be more of a boxer puncher without getting on my bicycle. And then when I got to the point where everybody was afraid of me, then I had to go and learn how to go get guys. And then when I started sparring with people like James Toney that wouldn't run, that I couldn't knock out because he was too slick to hit, I had to learn to fight on the inside and counter punch. So if I've learned everything that I've needed to learn in terms of every style, whether the man was short, whether he was tall, whether he was in shape, whether he could take a punch, if I've learned all of this and I'm trying to teach it to someone, how could you call me old school? Like, what is there, what else have you invented or could be invented under the sun that hasn't been done, when the Bible clearly say that there's nothing new under the sun? So for you to say that, then somebody else may think that too, but please tell me what old school is.
Well, see, well, yeah, I mean, and like I said, I'm purely playing devil's advocate here, because in my generation, when you call somebody old school, you know, that was somebody to look up to. That was somebody that you wanted to go and get your knowledge from. You know, I mean, and it didn't matter what side of the tracks you were on. If a guy was old school, that was somebody you wanted to meet, you wanted to talk to, you wanted to learn.
Yeah.
You know, now old school, you know, seems to bring a bad taste in your mouth, and I've never understood that. You know, but I thought it was because, you know, because of the generational gap here. But, you know, you're a world champion, and you seem to have the same idea that I do on that. But, you know, it just seems almost a crime, you know, and especially now, you know, if you tie in what you're saying to, you know, what we, going back to what you said earlier about the possibility of a Cuban program, being able to come to the United States and not having to defect and go through all that. I mean, you know, being to come through and still more or less represent their country, but on a professional level. Layman, you know, I think that, you know, we're going to have to find a way to put our amateurs back on track. And I think it's going to take, you know, guys like you and old school, you know, to do this. Because as you say, the young, I mean, we don't have the young trainers with enough resume yet. I mean, you know, we have some, Mr. Stephen Edwards, bring, you know, he's a very young trainer, but, you know, I mean, we just don't seem to, not only have we lost our amateur program, but we also seem to have lost the ability to bring along quality young trainers. And as you spoke about, you know, Emmanuel Stewart, Angelo Dundee, you know, we've seen, you know, Freddie Roach, he has a young protege, but, you know, we haven't really seen kind of an apprenticeship in trainers. Do we need something of that in order to bring these young guys along to fit with the younger generation?
Yes, we do, and I'm so glad that you actually brought that up, man, because I was really waiting to kind of tell you something that I have started doing. And I'm putting out a public challenge to any champion, no matter where you're at. And I'm just going to say, starting in America, I spoke to Buster Douglas last week. And Buster Douglas has he runs a community center, and they have a boxing gym. And so I spoke to Buster, and I said, hey, man, you know, I've been thinking this idea for quite a while. And I've just been mentioning your name because I've been hearing you run an amateur amateur boxing program in Ohio. And I'm here in Indianapolis, and I got the full support of my state, and we're right next door to each other. And I said, you know, man, when I was at the Columbus, it's called Ohio State Fair, and it's one of the biggest tournaments that I heard of growing up outside of, like, the Golden Gloves and things like that. So I said the first time I went, I remember I ran into you, man. They said they announced you in the crowd, and at that point he had already beat Mike Tyson, so he was a really big deal. And I was very inspired. I said, well, you know, with the amateur program that we have today, man, I don't want to leave it in the hands of these officials, because these officials, a lot of them got college degrees. They ain't never been punched in the face. We got our PhD in boxing inside the ring. I said, I want to put out an official challenge to you to get your best 12 fighters. I don't care if they little girls. I don't care if they little boys. I don't care if they're teenagers or grown men. But if they're amateur fighters, you get your best 12 together. You let me know what weight they are and what their experience is. And I'm going to find within the state of Indiana, I'm going to find another 12 to match your 12. Now, either I'm going to come to you or you're going to come to me, and I'm going to use the sales of my cigars to pay for it so it don't come out of nobody's pocket. And I said the winner of our duel, well, then we'll challenge either Chris Bird or James Toney or both. So once we have more fight, then we're going to go to Michigan, and we're going to challenge them. We're going to challenge their 12. So we're going to just keep this thing going. We're going to go to every single state, and we're going to find one world champion, no matter what weight he is or whatever he had a title, just as long as he was a champion, and we're going to challenge him, get your best 12, I'm going to get my best 12, and we're going to just keep this thing going, man. And I think that by us showing up as professionals, walking our fighters to the rings and holding seminars where we're talking to not just the fighters, but we're talking to these trainers, I think you're going to start to see a change in boxing, because if you want to build anything, if you want anything to grow, it first must be planted in the right soil, and it must be watered right, and it must have the right sunlight. And I think it starts with hearing it from people that's been at the top that started at the bottom. And that's what I am. I'm proud and nervous at the same time, because I need the support of the people and people like yourself to help this thing to really grow into something big.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely understand, you know, the whole concept of that, you know, and once again, Layman, like I said, I mean, you know, hey, man, you know, that's a long way for you to take them guys from Indiana, man, to get their butts whipped down in Ohio, but, hey, you know, we got
to go. There you go.
There you go.
See, that response you just gave me, I love that. That's the response I
want to
put everybody.
Hey, man, and then you talk about Chris Burley out here in San Diego taking them guys, you know, these guys from California out there, you know, and not, you know, hey, it's a long way to travel. Not only to get cold, but to get your butt whooped too, man. Hey, man, you know, you asking a lot of these guys, man. Hey, you know. But, hey,
man,
you know, the
only thing I can tell you is there's more than corn in Indiana.
Hey, man, but, no, hey, you know, I mean, it's a great concept. I'm looking forward to it. I've already put you in touch with my man, Jake Smith, down there in Maryland. So, you know,
yes.
I'm sure Mr. Scully up there in Connecticut will be glad to hear from you. And I'm pretty sure I got a guy down in Florida I might want to get you in touch with, too. So, hey, man, I'll be definitely glad to help in any way I can. You know, plus, the platform you have here every weekend. You know, on the weekend,
yes,
right?
Sir.
So, you know,
yes,
so we'll be glad to do each, you know, everything that we can to help your program along. You know, it's a blessing the time that you give us every week. So, hey, it's kind of a win-win situation. But Layman, you know, you've told everybody about, you know, what's happening with the Cuban thing, you know. So why don't you let everybody kind of know, you know, where they can find you on social media and, you know, anything that you might want to give us as your last thoughts for the evening, my man.
Well, I
excuse me one moment because I do have my co-host, Mr. Javon Clemens on the line. Javon, you got any final words for Landon before we leave this Sunday?
There was some great comments about his boxing challenge. And, JK, you was talking about Buddy McGirt coming on this week. I make sure I spread the word, Layman, to Buddy because I signed up to Gleason's gym. So I'll bring it up on the show, and I'll definitely spread it around the gym to get these trainers on their job to ready to challenge you guys out in Indianapolis.
Thank you, man, because the thing of it is, the undertone of this, why I'm saying this challenge is so important is because TV kids are going to be influenced by us fighters, whether we work with them directly or not. And that gives us a chance to critique these trainers on how better to help their fighter for the next show or the next show, win, lose, or draw, versus this trainer going and putting his kid in the tournament, his child losing and not knowing why he lost. But it's something that us as professionals will see, us as champions will see, and we'll be able to tell the trainer. So I think this is a win-win program all around because this is the first time that a trainer will actually allow himself to be critiqued without his ego getting in the way. Because if a world champion is telling you, well, this is why your kid didn't win, and if he's going to fight on any more of the shows that I'm going to, this is what he has to improve on. This is going to make boxing better, man.
Yeah, hey, I definitely have to agree with everything that you're saying, Layman. And like I said, my man, you know, hey, we'll spread the word everywhere that we can. And, hey, like as I was saying, you know, your final thoughts for the evening as we go off into the sunset here, my man.
I just want people to continue to tune into the show and to tell their friends to tune into the show. And if they can't, even call in, man, because this is one of the rare opportunities where you get to speak to a world champion who don't have an ego. And I'm here to answer any questions. And if I don't have the answer, I'll have the answer next time I talk to you, which would be the following week.
Hey, man. Appreciate your time, Layman. I will be getting in touch with you about some of your other promotions and, like I said, about that amateur show. So, thank you, my man, and look forward to having you again next week.
Thank you, man. God bless you, man. And I'm always going, you're going to get sick of me thanking you. But like I say, this is an avenue where I can be heard, and I love it, man. And thank you so much.
No problem, my man. You have a great night. Look forward to talking to you next week.
You too. Yes, sir. Talk to you.
Jabron, any last thoughts for the evening, my man?
Just can't wait. We got a lineup coming this week. Andre Ward, can't wait. Got that on deck. Hopefully Tuesday on the weekend wrap, we'll have some more breaking news and knowledge for our fans.
Yeah, we'll have, as a matter of fact, we'll have two of the gentlemen that will be on the card, I believe, on the 25th, Mr. Dylan Cook, also Willie Nelson, along with Buddy McGirt, and we will have, I'm not sure who our prospect will be, I believe it might be Malcolm McAllister, he's out of the Bay Area. So we're all about promoting these young fighters, too. And, make sure everyone listens to us Tuesday. You can catch us on Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner. So have a great night, and we'll see you next week. Have a great night, everyone.